Thank you.
Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively in the middle of the most delicious month of my life. I'm gaining weight. I'm taking on salt. People are giving me potatoes and crab chips and stuff. But I'm on the Crab Cake Tour. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is taking me back and forth across bridges, the Bay Bridge, up to Chestertown. We're going 301 down on the Potomac. I've been to Southern Maryland. I've been to Ocean City. I'm even going to Smith Island for Smith Island Cake next week. All of it inspired by my relationship with crab folks and local folks like Dami Hahn and her folks, Bill and Nancy Devine, who inspired all of this by educating me about crabs. And when Don Moeller beat me up about not knowing how to properly open a crab, Dami taught me. 3 million Facebook friends later, here we are. Dami, you sent me out on this crazy tour. You said that I need to meet a man who makes the crab cakes happen, Jack Brooks over at J.M. Clayton. And you've been telling me about it for like 3 years, 4 years now, and I finally did it. So are you proud of me?
I am very proud of you. Very proud of you, Nestor.
Well, Jack, welcome in. You were an incredible host to me on Thursday. By the way, Dennis over at Coons Ford, he had never made a crab cake in his life. I delivered this meat. One of his employees tried to put it in the freezer. I'm not kidding you. I stopped them. I tackled them. I did not allow that to happen at all right? But he made the crab cakes, and I also brought him some delicious gold watermelons that I found on 50 right around Easton as well. I had to make a U-turn. Thank you for the tour. Thank you for the education and certainly for the fresh meat. But more than that, I'm learning so much, and I'm sharing the videos. Everything that you showed me, I will show our folks. But your operation is truly – you might get pulled at any moment. Somebody comes up with a fresh, like, bushels of crabs. Right, Jack?
It was a great visit. Thanks for coming, Nestor. And, Dami, thanks for everything you do as well. Good to have you. A lot of great questions you asked. And, it's always fun to show great people around and show them what we've been doing here for over 100 years.
Well, the first thing I would say, and, Dami, you know this, every day I come in and I meet a Dami, they say, price of crab. High, availability, low, blending meats, doing things. This is the prime season. I saw a million crabs coming onto your dock, some medium males. I saw your operation. Where are we in the summer of 2021, Jack? I mean, as far as challenges and where you are, it felt like you were decently operational last week, but I'm coming high tide, right?
Well, yeah, and you did see us operating. It's good to be seen operating. Not so much fun when we're not, but it's been a slow year. We're seeing a lot of small crabs now, a lot of peeler crabs, and so we're optimistic about things really picking up here sooner than later, and hopefully we'll have a good strong finish to our season. But it's been an off season, no question about it. And what's been unusual about it this year is It's the same way from southern New York, which is that's as far north as the commercial crabbing goes, all the way to Florida around Alabama. So it's a pretty widespread thing. I don't know if it's just by chance, but crabs are cyclical by nature. So we certainly have been in off season, but we're looking for that pendulum to swing back sooner than later, and hopefully here in the next couple of weeks.
Dami, you've done such a great job educating me over the last couple of years just about Maryland crab and what makes a Maryland crab taste better and why the demand is there. And your dad famously tells a story of Oprah calling and wanting Maryland crab in December. And you saying that would be like me. And I began this segment eating that watermelon that you can only get right now, that gold watermelon, those peaches and those heirloom tomatoes, that incredible Silver Queen corn that I'm going to get more of when I go back over to the Eastern Shore this weekend and go to Oxford. And I delivered Jack's cooler. Jack, I've got your Playmate cooler. I'm bringing it back. I promise. I'm going to fill it up too. But for you, the Maryland crab and what Fadley stands for, right? And I'm going to give you all the love in the world right now. I've been across the shore. I'm about 10 crab cakes in 8 days, right? I'm going to go to some gourmet places as well. Nothing has been anything like your crab cake. In a complimentary way to say, it's unparalleled because of the kind of meat you use. But more than that, no one does the mustardy thing you do, you know, like you do a unique thing and I'm going other places and they do things that are good. Something's not as good, but they don't do the thing you do. You do a really unique thing. And I don't know that people really understand that, that yours is uniquely different in the way that it's flavored.
It is. It is. That's my mother's secret sauce. And she, you know, developed that many years ago. And it complements the Maryland crab so well. The Maryland crab, one of the things about the Chesapeake Bay is that crabs get fatty and they have this wonderful flavor.
God for that.
You don't get everywhere. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thank God for that. I said, no, thank God they get fatty. Yeah.
They do. They do. And it's the, you know, the estuary has a different food chain than just about everywhere on the East Coast. So they are a little better and they're a little sweeter and we love that flavor. And the sauce that my mom came up with years ago complements it so well. And it's not just the ingredients, but it's the manufacturers of those ingredients. So it's particular brands of ingredients, and the combination is really stunning with the crab meat and makes it that much better of a crab cake.
All right. I haven't told a lot of stories on the air about the actual crab cakes. I have little videos of them, but I don't know much what to say other than this is good. This is tasty. This has a mustardy flavor. Or I can taste the white pepper in this, or I can taste the, you know, whatever people put in their crab cakes, right? Because they're all different. The first crab cake I went to was Suicide Bridge in Hurlock, Maryland. It's a beautiful place. People should drive. Jack's nodding over there, secretary up the river. And I went out on the deck, didn't introduce myself, just ordered a crab cake. They're playing country music, you know, and it was beautiful. And I sat down and I got 3/4 of the way through this delicious crab cake. It was sweet. It was different than yours, different than Costas, different than Baltimore, different than Gina, different than anybody, just different. It was their place, right? And I got to the end. It was really delicious. And I saw the orange females. You taught me this, Damie. And I kicked it over and I'm like, why does this taste so good? Like, is it the mayonnaise, the mustard, the Tabasco, the Worcestershire? And I'm thinking, well, the meat's superior. And I'm looking at where I am in the time of the year in the same way the gold watermelon or the same way the peach is superior right now. And I look at the weather and where I am and what time of the year it is. And Jack, I'll have you pick that up because you know where I am, right up the river from where you are in Cambridge, right by the Bill Burton Bridge. And you were telling me about female crabs and those waters and the brackishness. Let's talk about what makes every crab that comes onto your pier a little bit of a filet mignon, a little bit of a Kobe beef kind of thing, just because it's Maryland and it's in season, right?
You know, good point. And yeah, we were picking mostly males when you were here. We picked females as well. But your question to me was, you know, where are the crabs taste best? And I said, well, right here in the Choptank River, right here in the Chesapeake Bay, Maryland, Chesapeake Bay. And these crabs, you know, it's like Damie said, you know, you start with the main ingredient and we have a unique flavor that can't be duplicated. And people would love to be able to duplicate it, but it's inherent here. Maybe it's the water they live in, the food they eat. But we get that orange mustard looking fat in those crabs, and it just makes our crabs special. And it's like I gave the example of the Boston Seafood Show. It's in March every year. We have frozen, crab meat's been frozen or pasteurized there every year. And people come by and get a little sample. They say, what do you got in this stuff? We'll say, hey, what do you mean? And I know what they mean, but I just want them to tell me. They said, well, it doesn't taste like anything at the show. Well, what do you mean? They say it's so sweet. It tastes so good. We said, well, it's just real Maryland crab. And so many people say, I didn't think you'd get Maryland crab anymore. But these crabs we have here, every time they molt, they're building up their fat. I think they're ready, you know, like a bear. They're ready to think they're going to hibernate like they do every winter. And maybe that's what makes our crab different from the warmer water crabs, and that maybe they don't build up the fat like ours do because maybe they don't hibernate there in the warm waters like ours do. But whatever it is, we're fortunate to have it. The good Lord gave it to us. And as long as we got that, we do have something special, and I don't see it going away anytime soon.
Well, the educational part of this, Damie, is there's one thing you telling me and your mom and dad, who seem to be sage, and everybody's got a marketing angle these days about Virginia's for lovers and this is better. I love New York. Things are better than other things. But then there comes down to, like, give me the taste test. Give me the real challenge on it. And Jack, when you put that pound of crab meat, and you were just trying to be nice to me and be hospitable, and it was a very lovely thing for you to do. And I said to you, no, I don't want your crab meat. I'm eating a crab cake every day the rest of the month. This is perishable. It has to be made this weekend. I gave it to Dennis. And the first thing Dennis said to me, and I had him on this morning, is he said, I opened it and it was the mustard and I could see it. And like, and he now will never eat another crab from anywhere. He wants to drive down and buy 2 pounds today from you. Like, literally, give me a little bit of the background of what happens to that meat. Because you said something about we freeze it and pull it out in March. What's the reality for somebody like me that if I wanted to put a couple pounds of your meat in my fridge and have it, or order Christmas time from Damie and say, deliver me crab meat, right? How does crab meat keep? I'm just trying to understand the science of it a little bit.
Well, you know, certainly you get it at Damie's place. We have it here, as you saw, Nestor. But typically we sell it fresh, frozen, and pasteurized. And we put up our frozen and pasteurized inventory late in the fall or in the mid-fall, where the fat of the crabs are really at its height. And so the crabs are really, really good that time of year. And there are some people who are a little reluctant to get frozen or pasteurized in a can.
It doesn't sound right. Like, to me, I'm like, that doesn't sound like it's going to taste like what I usually get, what I get when I order a crab cake at Fadley's. That doesn't sound like it would be frozen, you know?
Well, we use the frozen all winter, blast frozen.
And really? So I've eaten it a million times and don't know it.
Yes, and the freezing process they're using, you got to realize, is a very quick freezing process, so that it's not like you taking home a can and sticking it in your freezer where it's slowly being frozen. And when you slowly freeze something, the water in the meat crystallizes in a different way. And when you go to thaw it, all that crystallized water will drop out of the meat, fall out of the meat.
So let me ask you this. If Dennis's guy would have thrown that fresh meat Thursday night in the freezer and Dennis would have come in Friday, what would have happened to his crab cake Friday night? I don't know.
Probably nothing. But the longer it's in the freezer, it will become watery. And when you go to thaw it, you'll turn it over and there's a lot of water that will come out. And that will then change the texture of the meat. But when you blast freeze it and you freeze it very quickly, those cells don't give off the water like they did. It doesn't crystallize like that. So it's so fast that the water stays in the meat. And of course, crab meat is mainly water, you know, just like we are. And so you want that to be done very quickly. And in that process, you're not going to notice the difference. And the same thing with the pasteurization. The pasteurization is so well done that those sealed cans can be pasteurized, and I can open a can from the Eastern Shore that's been pasteurized for us in October. And like Jack said, it's the best time of year. Those crabs.
Well, I mean, you send a million crab cakes at Christmas time, and nobody ever says that didn't taste like a fresh crab. Your crab cake. I mean, all they say is that's delicious. I want to do it again at Easter or Valentine's Day, or whatever the special occasion would be. But I do think that and you're 6 blocks away from me, Damie, you know, even though it looks like I'm sitting at the counter, I could come over there right now. I would think, having done this now a couple of weeks and eating one a day, I'm thinking the crab cake would taste better now than maybe it would in December to your taste buds. Or am I wrong? Or is that just a fallacy?
I think they're always, but see, the thing is, you're not going to get them side by side. So you're not going to get right now you're going to get everything fresh. In the wintertime, the processes they're using, that Jack's using, the pasteurization and the blast freezing, is so good today compared. Now, if I, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have said that, but today it's so good that you're really going to not notice the difference. It's going to be negligible.
You know, for anybody that's listening, I've been on an education tour. Jack Brooks is here. He's from JM Clayton. He's just across the bridge in beautiful Cambridge, where I'm delivering his cooler later this week. I'm also having a crab cake at Ocean Odyssey with Travis Todd across the street as I make my way through the Eastern Shore and the Oxford and all that. I've learned so much. I sat with the Thrasher's French fry people, and they flew out to Idaho to research potatoes, because that's what they do. And they said the storage of winter potatoes, it's amazing. My friends from Wise Markets, I talk produce with them and about cold storage of peaches and moving them from Georgia to Maryland and like all of that. And I also spoke with the folks at seafood folks, Harrison's in Ocean City. Their family was put out of business a generation, two generations ago, in the peach industry on the Eastern Shore by refrigeration. So all of this stuff that we manufacture and make and get it fresh. Jack, Damie's dad said to me something that sticks with me about crabs being hunted and harvested, that they're one of the few last things on earth that we don't farm raise in any way, and it can't be done. Same thing, even oysters can have farms, right?
Wild.
Yeah. Why, from the wild. Your dad said that, and that. And I'm always trying to think of what other things other than mosquitoes that we hunt in the wild. But Jack, for you, seeing generations of folks over on your side of the bay and knowing these people that have these boats, this is their livelihood. This is your livelihood. I saw a bunch of folks on H-2B visas that come in, that feed their families, that have this incredible. Damie, it made what you and I do not look like we know how to pick a crab, right?
I know. They're
Jack,
quick.
Give me the state of crabbers and the actual people, because it's nice for you to wear a hat and watch them come harvesting in, but this is the work of hundreds, if not thousands, of people out on the bay every single day. That has to happen in order for me to have a crab cake on Christmas Eve from Damie, right?
Right.
Well, Lester, you bring up an excellent point. The people don't realize the effort that goes in to produce that 1 pound of crab meat or that one crab cake. And it's an extraordinary effort that begins on the water, obviously, by the guys going out and catching crabs. They get up early, they stay out, they come in 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then their day starts at 2 or 3 o'clock the next morning. And then our folks here that we're fortunate to have, you mentioned H2B workers, you know, that's the whole program's got a problem, but these are great people. Wonderful, wonderful people come up every season to work in our factory and other seafood or crab factories around the shore. And
to make sure that I get a crab cake when I show up on the shore.
To make sure you get a crab cake, because without these people, our places go dark. You know, we close, the fishermen down here can't work. The truck drivers here don't work. The whole way of life here, it stops. So, but they're great people. They come in here and they pick a crab at a time. Every bushel of crabs yields 1 pound of the jumbo lump and about 3 pounds of the smaller pieces. So, but it takes a lot of effort to get that 1 pound of crab meat out there. It takes an enormous amount of effort to get that one crab cake that Damie does. So, I'm glad you had a chance to come down.
Well, I'm going to show the videos. People will actually see the operation. If you're out on our Facebook or YouTube, anywhere at Baltimore Positive, it's all coming later in the month. I'm kind of breadcrumbing it out as I move around the state and eat crab cakes. But every single one of these crab cakes that I've had, wherever it's come literally from the hands of humans, whether it's your place, Venezuela, Texas, wherever people, because nobody tells where they give their meat. And I know the pricing and all of that. And I can start to taste the difference a little bit, but this is an industry like that is really across the globe relegated to very, very small amount of places, right? There's not a whole lot of places we do crab.
No, they're not, Nestor. And, you know, we've tried to mechanize picking crabs, and I'll show you a little bit of that when you were here. The old machines that we developed years and years ago, and my father and some of his colleagues developed, but just have not been able to replace those human hands to go in and pull that crab meat out of a crab. And you've done it before. The folks who picked crabs before know how tedious it is to get that jumbo lump out, to minimize the number of shell that you get in the container, and to have a saleable pound of crab meat. So, you know, we're all in on trying to help mechanize things, to try to maybe get away from the program that we can't rely on. But, you know, these folks that come up here every year, they're wonderful people. They're hardworking folks. They come, they work, they go home, they play by the rules. And, you know, this program is our lifeline to either staying in business or you get your crab cake from your crab meat from China.
Right. Right.
Well, and I don't like the way that tastes.
That's so important. It's funny you say that, Jack, because I do remember back in the 80s when they were trying to mechanize some of the from some of the crab processing, and how many people brought their crab meat back saying, this is full of shells, you know. and they wanted to know. And then I'd have machine picked next to hand picked, and there was always a price differentiation. And then people stopped buying the machine picked, because the hand picked is the only way to get the shells out. And it's not for lack of trying, it's because the product isn't that good with the machine prick. And every crab's a different size, and they all have different shapes. And just like, you know, it's like trying to find the bones in something that tiny. So that doesn't work. And these people that come up that we need these H-2B visas, you need those, and part of the problem, and Jack, I don't know if we've touched on this at all, is that our industry of seafood is not considered an essential food source in the United States yet, and it needs to be.
That's kind of crazy. Say that again.
Yes. We are not considered an essential food source. Seafood processing is not considered essential. Like farming is.
Well, when I sit down and want a crab cake, it feels essential to me.
It's essential to just about everybody who eats them, but the government does not consider it as an essential food source, one of the reasons why there are caps in the visas, the number of visas that these processors can get. And you can touch on that a little bit, because I think people need to be aware that this is going on and how difficult it is for people like Jack to get.
Well, all people know is crabs are expensive. You know, like they know that. And then they come to the proprietor, and every single person that slings a crab cake from Fratelli's in Salisbury to, you know, down to Southern Maryland, everybody's aware that the crab cake that was $19 last year's 25, whatever that number, whatever the math is. And they kind of all, as consumers, just want to say, it's like when gas goes up. Why does gas cost more? You know, why do things cost more? And we could all talk about COVID, inflation, all of that. But this is a very, very delicate industry that is intimate to all of us who love crabs, right? Like everybody in our, we put a crab with the logo, for crying out loud. But for those of you in it, you know, selling it, being a part of it, you are the resource we come to. And when it's not any good, and I'll be honest, I had a couple of crab cakes that were not as good as your crab cake. And I then go back to say, well, where did the meat come from? And then how do you season it? How do you prepare it? But if the meat's not good, you can dress it up all you want. That's what I sort of have learned a little bit on this tour, Damie, about the actual product from a kitchen.
And we have a lot of things going on in the industry that is causing these prices to go up, and it's not just COVID. And that's why I wanted Jack to kind of touch on that about the essential being essential and limiting the visas for these crab processing.
Well, yeah, you bring up, that's an excellent point, Damie. We've spoken about many, many times, and what we do with the workers that come in, or what they do for us, is basically manufactured food, as you mentioned,
typical, you know, guy from Dundalk will say, why don't you hire some people from Cambridge to do this work? And then I come down and see the work, and you will see the work on video, and realize, like, it's not something you're going to teach somebody to do in a weekend, right? To make a living, talk about getting shells out of crab.
Plus, you know, it's only 6 months of the year.
Yeah, exactly. As you know, when I first came here to work, gosh, I don't know, 50, 60 years ago, you know, had all local folks, and it was great. It was wonderful. These people were willing to wait out the off season, come and do the job, start in April, get laid off around Thanksgiving. But then other opportunities came along, trade schools and things like that. And literally parents stopped encouraging their kids to be the best crab picker they could be anymore. And they used to, literally they used to. They took great pride in getting their kids to come to work with them, showing them how to get up early in the morning, go to a job, do a job, good day's work, and then go home and get paid at the end of the week. So we would we'd love to have local workers do these jobs, but unfortunately, those folks are just not willing to take these jobs anymore. Too many other opportunities out there. But, you know, with the essential thing, the H-2B program is made up mostly of visas that go to the service industry, like landscape, hospitality, and stuff like that. And the seafood processing is just a small number out of the annual 66,000 visas they hand out. So there's not a whole lot of visas to go around, not enough for all of us. And that's an ongoing problem, has been since 2005. We had a break there when 7, 8, and 9, when the economy tanked. The service industry stopped getting them so much, so we didn't have a visa cap problem. But then it raised its ugly head again in about 15 and 16, and we're on the treadmill again. We're on a lottery literally every year to know whether or not, through the Department of Labor, U.S. Department of Labor, find out whether or not we're going to be.
I think we're going to get workers. A lottery to see whether you're going to have
you can have craft. Processing or not.
Yeah, exactly. It's insane as it sounds. These food manufacturing companies, the small ones here that, well, you saw Nestor, Damon, you know what they look like. We're in a lottery, and it's basically the odds are 60%, 66% actually, that you will not get workers next year. So because out of the 66,000 visas that are being requested, they have about 3 times more requests for those 66. So well over that, actually. So you're in a lottery. Department of Labor conducts a lottery every year in January, February, sometime around there. So you find out whether or not, hey, you won and you're going to turn the lights on and work this year, or you're going to have to tell your crabbers.
You're
going to have to break your contracts that you've had for decades. You know, these companies, they just didn't start up last month or last year. They've been in business, many of them, 10, 20, 30, 50 years or more.
For the people who actually – tell me about the folks. I mean, you didn't introduce me to them because they were too busy, and they were all – some of them made eye contact, said hello, but they were picking crabs. Tell me about those people and who they are and what they represent to your business. And I ask you, and you said they're usually the same people. This is an incredible – this is an Olympic skill set to be able to pick a crab the way we've seen it, that I've seen it, that you will see it when you see these videos at Baltimore Positive. But then I wonder, who are these people that go home every year, take money? Tell me about they were all women from what I saw, and from Mexico, from what I understand.
But that's correct. All the folks that most of the folks we have working actually picking the crab are women. And, you know, I kind of related to like sewing or knitting. They're so much better with their hands and fingers than us guys. If I went in there and started picking crabs, my brothers would come in there and fire me in the first 30 minutes, because one, I'd have shells all over the place. Two, I would, you know, the jumbo lump be broken up. And three, I'd probably be eating too much. But these people, they come every year. And we've had a lot of them here coming since 1997, the very first year we started using the program. And then if we have some that retire and they say, hey, I'm not coming back next year, thank you so much for this opportunity. I bought a ranch. You know, my kids are through school now. I thank you, but I'm not coming back. But then they'll say, but I have a son, or I have a daughter, or I've got a cousin or a brother or sister. And so we got some with family members here that they come and they take great pride in working. They're like our family. And, you know, we're glad to see them come, provided we get visas in the spring. And we hate to see them go when the season ends. But it's what we do. It's the nature of what we do is seasonal. And we can't change that. You know, the state of Maryland, the government tells us when the season starts, when the season ends. And, you know, Mother Nature tells us, too. So we're regulated pretty heavily by many government agencies. And these are good people that just want to come. They want to work. They want to send their money home and support their families. And they want to go home at the end of the season.
And a guy like me just wants a crab cake from a gal like Damie and her family. Yeah, and we want it to be fresh and delicious and affordable. Right, Damie?
Absolutely. And it's going to get more and more difficult if we don't fix this issue. And it could really be simply fixed by making this industry essential. Because if it's deemed essential, then they don't have to be in a lottery. They can get what they need to provide all of us what we would like to have. And at this point, without that consideration, it's they're in this lottery situation. And not only that, is the people that are coming up and doing this work, who want to come back year after year, who play by the rules, who do what they're supposed to, they're then out of the jobs.
You know, Damien, back in 2005, when the cap first became a problem, the issue being numerical cap, then Senator Stevens from Alaska, you know, seafood, the biggest employer in Alaska, the second biggest economy behind oil. And his fishery people did not have people to come, visas that year, to come and certify the fish eggs as caviar. So they could not sell these fish eggs as caviar to Japan because they were just fish eggs. Now the certifier needed to come over and look at those fish eggs and say, yeah, they're certified as caviar. So instead of the fish egg price, they got caviar price. So then Senator Stevens said, hey, we need to make an exemption for these fish roe processors. So he was chairman of the appropriations at that point, they had earmarks, and he put an exemption in. So there is an exemption that exists for a certain segment of seafood processing. What they really need to do is just expand that to seafood processing. It'd be exempt from the numerical cap, and that will fix these small food processing companies so they can continue to manufacture these seasonal seafood.
Is this Biden? Is this Cardin? What is this? Because I was in Ocean City last week. Same situation. J1, which is a lot of Eastern European kids that keep businesses going in Ocean City, especially this time of year, right around the middle of August, kids have to go back to college in America, right? And and I still need a crab cake in Ocean City later on this month when I'm down there. Who do you write to, Jack? Who is it? Congressman? Would it be Heather Mazira, who I was, if she was elected? Is it Andy Ayers? Who is fighting on your behalf in Washington, D.C. right now, or who could we have a fight on?
Well, certainly it's a bipartisan issue. There are some members who really believe that there needs to be a fix for seafood. And there are some members, and bipartisan as well, that feel that, hey, it's not necessary, just our local people, which we'd love to do. But we demonstrate year in, year out that we are unable to staff these jobs with local folks. So your members of Congress is who you need to talk to. We've had some very supportive members, Senator Van Hollen and Senator Cardin here, and many of the Maryland congressional delegation, Congressman Harris, Congressman Ruppersberger, and others who have been very supportive. So, you know, reach out to them, say, hey, you know, I want my local crab meat.
We don't have a lot of bipartisan issues. Eating crabs is one of them. That's why I'm doing
this. Yeah, you got it.
It's even wearing red, see?
It's making seafood essential. It needs to be essential. It needs to be essential for all of us. It needs to be essential across the country, up and down the Eastern Seaboard, and particularly for us, crab, because if it doesn't, I mean, the end user's not going to get it. That's just the way it's going to be, because it can't continue down this path. So the more people that are aware of this issue and press on Congress to make seafood essential, make crab processing essential, particularly for our state, is make crab processing essential, the better off that we're all going to be. And we're going to be able to enjoy this for years to come. If we don't take care of this issue right now and fix it soon, it's going to be a challenge. Continue to go up in price.
I got to fix something right now as we exit here. And this is for Dennis over Coons Ford, because he said to me, I need another pound of that meat. It changed my life. I need it. I need it now. And Damie, you stock Jack's stuff from J.M. Clayton in Cambridge, Maryland. But come in, I see the ice in the back and the shrimp, whatnot. He can get it from you, right? Most of the time. Because as I understand it, this isn't 365, right?
If Jack will sell me some more, he can always get it from me. But I do have Maryland crab meat on the stall every day. So we are getting Maryland, and I even have some coming out of Virginia. I've got all Chesapeake Bay meat on the stall, lump and jumbo lump.
Jack, don't lie to me. Be really honest. You've been honest all along. When you handed me that pound of crab meat that you put in the igloo cooler, was that like private stock gold? That, you know what I mean? Like, was that something you pull from the top? I'm just wondering, and I'm wondering, like, and that's very kind if you do that.
Yes.
But now you've spoiled Dennis. And like, so was this just your straight line jumbo lump crab? You didn't do anything special for me, right?
No, I would have, but it's all special. I mean, so we just picked a pound. I said, hey, the guy went to box, he grabbed 8 pound and put it in ice for you. And off.
And that was just your jumbo lump right now.
Yeah.
Now, what does that wholesale for now? And give me what the reality of that. We're talking about making it. That it's hard to make. It takes a bushel of crab, like the whole deal, right?
Well, you know, the prices range, but you know, it can vary quite a bit, especially this right now. And as you said earlier, you know, things have been extremely high this year, scarcity of crabs. We've had the price of crabs to process. Typically, it's about $30-$40 a bushel this time of year. And now we've got over $100 and most of the crabs that we process.
For 4 pounds.
Hence the prices are up through the roof. But, you know, they'll be coming down. And, you know, when crabs start showing up, they'll come down. And, you know, it's all going to work out, you know. It's supply and demand. It's like water. It finds its own level.
Well, I have been in every place where they're serving crabs on the table. They're trying to make me eat the bread and the potatoes and doing all the salt. And I'm trying to like refrain a little bit. And I'm getting there. I'm a third of the way through this crab cake at the everyday. But once September comes, the big crabs are going to run and I'm going to go for the big crabs. I'm going to get off the crab cake a little while. And Damie, I'm just going to say this. I keep eating crab cakes to measure against, you know, you, Costas, the places that I do business with. You're saying, well, I wonder what that crab, because I never get crab cakes when I'm on the Eastern Shore because I have you, right? So I'm trying them all. It is amazing the difference in recipes, the way they're made, the way they're served. And crab's just wonderful, man. It's been a great like conversation starter all the way along. So I want to thank you for inspiring me and teaching me a little bit that you're not nuts telling me how the Maryland crab tastes better. It's true.
It is true. And this month you should be throwing a few of those soft crabs in there because they're out there and plentiful, aren't they, Jack?
We're really into soft crabs right now.
All right,
all good stuff.
I was in Southern Maryland. I was at Courtney Seafood in Wynn, Maryland. I'm talking down by Point Lookout on the Western Shore, looking out onto the Potomac. And she said to me, soft shells, my dad got it out of the water right here. You want it. Came on fresh bread with bacon and fat. Eastern Shore tomatoes, and far too much mayonnaise on it. Like for me, you know what I mean? But it was delicious. So I crossed that off the list. You know what I haven't had? I haven't had an oyster on this yet. And Damie, I'm going to say something to you from a taste standpoint. In East Baltimore, I told you we were poor. I used claw meat, probably from Jack or, you know, one of his competitors in 1978. And we Worcestershired it and mustard mayonnaise. Throw the kitchen sink in it. But always celery seed. I have not had a crab cake anywhere with a hint of celery seed. I did have a little celery seed stuck in my tooth, but it was from crab soup at Courtney's. I had a little soup as well. I've been after all of it here this month, but the amount of recipes and what you can do with a crab cake, it really is amazing.
It is. And you don't want to do too much to it because it's like you said, it's great right out of the can. It's, you know, it's perfect on its own. So you don't want to do too much and overpower it. But as long as they don't do that, that crab meat should be good.
How are your parents? And I love right? the claw. In there?
I mean, I'll use claw for anything.
Mom doing good? Dad doing good?
They're both doing great. Mom's still coming in and making crab cakes. She's there every Saturday. And
Saturday's the day she makes them. Now that's a little secret.
There Friday. She's usually there Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But, you know, people come in to see her on Saturday. So she takes pictures with everybody, you know.
So I'm coming to see you on the crab cake tour. You don't know this yet, but you're about to find out. The 24th, I'm going to the Orioles game because Shohei Ohtani, the greatest show in the world, is coming to town. So I am That's going to be a two crab cake day that day. I'm going to come see you. You're going to be my dinner crab cake before. How am I going to go to a ball game and not get your crab cake before I come over there?
That's true. Probably, I don't know how anybody does.
I'm probably going to have beer with it. I'm probably going to like have some soup and do it all up. It's mac and cheese for sure. Like I need more mac and cheese on the 24th of the month. Jack, thank you for the hospitality. Thank you for the cooler. Thank you for the meat. Thank you for the education. I'm here to exchange information and eat your crab meat and to say thank
you. And let's make seafood essential. Make crab processing essential. There we go.
Thank you, guys.
Jack Brooks, J.M. Clayton, Damie Hahn. She's over at Fadley's making delicious crab cakes. One click. If I made you hungry, one click. Tomorrow you're eating her crab cakes. Or just come downtown. If you're coming to a ball game, stop by. See them at Lexington Market. What's that?
Or we'll ship them to you.
One click away, right at BaltimorePositive.com. Damie, thank you. Jack, thank you. Your cooler's coming back this week, all right?
Thanks, Lester. Thank you, Damie.
Eastern Shore Lester. Crab cakes, here I come. From downtown to the Eastern Shore and all around. Jack Brooks from J.M. Clayton to Damie Hahn over at Fadley's. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. Reminder, find the videos of Jack's operation. It's going to blow your mind out of Baltimore Positive.